Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is a bill where people who live here in our country will be treated without amnesty, but without animosity.
President Bush endorsing the Senate immigration compromise, but the A word, amnesty, won't go away. Here is Republican Congressman Steve King of Iowa, as played on Fox News Sunday.
It's a pardon to immigration law breakers, and it's a reward with the objective of their crime.
And it's not just concern for amnesty that is making this bill a tough political sell. New York Senator Chuck Schumer, also on Fox News Sunday, expressed the concerns that many Democrats have.
The biggest objection I and many Democrats have, which could be a stumbling block to the whole bill, is this guest worker program. It's an additional program. Hundreds of thousands of people come in. There's virtually no protections. They're going to bring wage rates down. And after their time is up, they're probably going to stay in the country and become a new group of illegal immigrants.
So we will do something unusual, but I think necessary this hour to try and hash it all out, a three-way debate on the new immigration bill. And really, we could go four or five, six or seven ways. There are so many different people and interest groups affected by this. But with me now are Washington Post Writers Group syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, who, like most supporters, says the bill is not perfect. Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. That's an advocacy group that wants less immigration generally. He opposes the bill. And Chunghwa Hong, deputy director of the New York Immigration Coalition, a pro-immigration advocacy group. She also opposes the bill. Welcome back to WNYC, all three of you. Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning.
Ruben, how much of this bill do you support, and how enthusiastically?
Well, I'm pretty impressed, frankly. You know, for folks who cover politics, you just don't see things like this very often. You don't see a compromise that conservatives love and hate and liberals love and hate, and it brings together traditional adversaries and splits traditional allies. It's a fascinating piece of legislation or a proposal for legislation. And, I think I like most of it, more than half of it. I think the critics on the far right will say they love 50% and hate 50%. Ditto for the folks on the far left. I think I'm pretty impressed with it overall. It needs some work, obviously some tweaking here and there, but I'm sort of with John Kyle on this. So certainly no bleeding heart liberal John Kyle from Arizona, hardline conservative, who said, "Well, not perfect. This is a good starting point."
Well, what do you like specifically?
Well, I like the idea of, frankly, I like the idea of a guest worker program, despite the fact that liberal Democrats don't like it. I think it's a way to regulate the flow of people coming into the country, keeping track of who's in the country. I like the idea that there's a path to legalization for the 12 million folks who are here. But here's the part that I like best. Despite the fact that folks on the far left think that the path is too burdensome and too much trouble, and the Mexican government, frankly, shares that view, we now know, I disagree. I think that this should be not a cakewalk. This should be a very difficult path. It should be a long path, and that the idea of being able to live in a country legally is a very precious thing. We ought not take it lightly, and certainly the immigrants in question ought not take it lightly. If they want to stay here, they got to earn it.
All right. So that's a little bit of what at least one of our guests likes about the bill. Now, to get into the opposition in an organized way, I think we should break this debate into some major pieces to make this conversation doable and clear for the listeners. And in a few minutes, we'll open up the phones for certain kinds of listeners at different times of the hour. We will talk about the plan for immigrants currently here illegally, the proposed guest worker program, and the proposed changes to legal immigration and the impact all of these things may have for different kinds of people and also for the economy, both nationally and here in the New York area. Mark Krikorian, let me turn to you and ask you about the plan for immigrants currently here illegally, the so-called path to citizenship that Ruben just said is not amnesty. Do you think it's amnesty?
Well, I mean, of course it is, and I don't use that, I don't use that term as some kind of, you know, dirty word. Amnesty in the immigration business, whatever country you're talking about, only means one thing. The illegal aliens get to stay. That's all an amnesty is, and that's the only way you can describe that situation. So yes, of course it's an amnesty. There may be a reason for that. I'm against it, but make a case for it. The idea of running away from the word came from focus groups that the National Council of La Raza did early in this administration when they were
working with the Mexican government and the American government to sort of figure out how they were going to craft and sell this policy. So I think the dispute over the label is kind of a sideshow. The question is, do we want to let all the illegal aliens stay, or do we want to start enforcing the law, something we've never even tried to do before, so that we squeeze and reduce the illegal population through attrition by sending the message that the party is over for them and they need to go home?
Chung-Hwa Hong on the same question.
Yeah, I think overall the deal is anti-family, anti-worker, and un-American, and there's no way you can justify major compromises in those areas. So I think that has to be the kind of the bottom line test, and that if you start compromising so much so that it starts defeating the whole purpose of, you know, what is a problem we have to solve.
Right,
here.
But so let me jump in, because I'm trying to break this into pieces. There are so many issues that I want to do it separately. The plan for immigrants currently here illegally, the proposed guest worker program, which is, I think, what you were just referring to. We'll talk about that later.
Right.
And then the proposed changes to legal immigration. So how about the plan for immigrants currently here illegally, what Mark Krikorian just called amnesty?
Yeah, I think that's the part. You know, it doesn't matter what you call it. Our country needs to give legal status to 12 million people who are already in our communities working in jobs that our economy needs to have filled in order to sustain our economy. So giving legal status is something, you know, it's not something that we can decide whether or not we're going to do it. It just has to happen for us to kind of sustain a country and sustain an immigration system that works. So I think that's a positive thing, because, the both parties are finally responding to the need to address it as part of a comprehensive reform.
Well, Ruben Navarrete, let me go back to you and get you to lay out some of the specific steps that illegal immigrants currently here would have to take. As I understand it, there are several very specific steps, which some people consider fairly high hurdles. For example,
right.
Paying a $5,000 fee
per
adult, I believe, right?
Well, yeah, and I'll check this out. The worst, I won't say the worst, but the highest hurdle, okay? I happen to support, but a lot of folks on the left really hate this idea. It's not even a question of the $5,000 fee, which is payable over 8 years. I would make the argument that the fee is not too high, that people should pay $5,000, especially if it's over 8 years. They can find the money to do it, and we ought not lower that price. But the real high hurdle is this notion of a touchback. And this is the thing that undermines the claim of amnesty more than anything else. The fact that after sometime between the first 8 years of this program, an illegal immigrant would physically have to leave the country to go back to their home country, to touch home base, go back there, get processed, to come back into the country legally. I mean, it's outrageous for folks to think this is amnesty, because the transaction is happening on foreign soil. It's not even happening on U.S. soil.
Now, explain how that would work. For who would have to go back, and they say heads of households, for example.
Correct.
Who counts as a head of household under this bill, and for how long would they have to go back, and what would they have to do to get back in?
Well, here you go. You got, like, say, five people in the family. All of them are illegal. Hardline conservatives would say, well, they're all here illegally, so they all have to go back home. The folks in the touchback program say, well, pushing the touchback program say, well, four of them can stay, the kids and say the mother can stay, the father as head of household, or if it's a mother who has the household, she has to go back, whoever it is has to go back, get processed under what would have been the Pence plan proposed by Mike Pence of Indiana. It would have been 7 to 10 days. Under the STRIVE Act proposed by Luis Gutierrez and Jeff Flake in Congress, it might be a day or two. That's still sort of debatable, but the idea of physically having to leave the country is driving folks on the left nuts, because they say, well, why in the world would these folks want to leave? Why would they trust the U.S. government to let them back in? And so the very notion somehow that this is amnesty is just a political hot button. It's just a word they use to gin up support for their side.
I read somewhere that there would have to be a year during which the touchback took place. Is that accurate?
No, that's the guest worker provision, Brian.
No, I know there's that, too. But so people could go back for a very short amount of time, Ruben.
Mark's right about that. I think it is part of the guest worker. It's a three-legged stool, you know, to use Michael Chertoff's phrase. You've got the enforcement, the guest worker, and the legalization plan. And I think under guest worker, the guest workers who come in would be in for 2 years.
They can stay for 2 years, come back for a third two-year stretch, and then they'd have to go home permanently. But, Ruben, go ahead.
Oh, Brian, in this respect, I mean, you could say that this is sort of a bill that only the authors could love. I mean, it's so ugly in some respects because the very fact that you have to leave the country for a couple of years, come back, I think the folks on the left, you know, really have a leg to stand on in terms of criticizing this bill. It's probably the best they're going to get. But this notion that somehow it's a free giveaway just is just not accurate. It's just much more difficult than people are making it seem.
All right. So, Mark Krikorian, what about that?
Well, I mean, just to talk about the touchback part, so-called, it's really phony. I mean, first of all, it only involves, like Ruben said, the head of the household. And it is purely symbolic. There is no interruption in their residence in the United States, no interruption in their work. It's just a question of doing all of their processing and paperwork here and then going through the formality of going back home and picking up the paperwork and coming back here. Now, if you think legalization, amnesty, is a good idea, I don't know, maybe that's a way to do it. But it really is just kind of a gimmick to enable the supporters to say, look, they're leaving the country and rebooting their status. That's the way the other image people have used, to reboot their status. But they don't interrupt their lives. It doesn't change anything in any way. It's just a question of, for most of these people, crossing over into Tijuana or Juarez, having lunch, picking up the visa, and then coming right back. It's phony.
Well, let me play what Commerce Secretary Carlos Gutierrez said about that yesterday on CNN Late Edition.
Well, first of all, as you say, they have to qualify. They have to pay a fine. There is no automatic path to citizenship. There is no guarantee that they will get their legal status.
Chung-Hwa Hong, Executive Director of the New York Immigration Coalition, is this lunch in Tijuana and pick up your green card?
I think it's totally pointless. If we're going to do legalization, let's just do it. I think there are serious workability issues. And there's deep skepticism in immigrant communities. You know, they're saying they'll do legalization, but there's like five other conditions that have to be met. Touchback isn't the only one. There's these things called triggers. So legalization won't even start until certain triggers are met, where the DHS, the Homeland Security, has total control over declaring whether the triggers are met around enforcement kinds of things that need to happen. So
what does that mean, for example?
So for some of the legalization to happen, these triggers that are built in says, well, none of this will happen until there's a certain number of border patrol that's in place, until there are certain kinds of fences and there are certain kinds of security measures in place. So it's really using holding legalization hostage to get some of the other restrictive agenda through. And so I think, you know, when you want to have a policy discussion, let's just look at what we want and let's just get it done. And so workability issue is a huge one. And unless we work out some of the details, this really is one of those programs where the devil's in the details. You know, it's just not going to work. And more and more people, as you'll see people read the bill, started to read the bill yesterday, which just became available, they will see that it's going to be almost impossible to implement. So if we believe in it, if we think we should do it, if we want to do the legalization, let's just do it without building in. I agree with Mark that it's pointless. Kind of, why do you make people run around?
All right, so we have an immigration advocate and an immigration restrictionist on the same side here.
That's right.
We are going to continue in a minute. Now, I want to open up the phones for a particular group of people first, and that is illegal immigrants. We've gotten calls here from people identifying yourselves as illegal before. We want you to call us now and tell us, will you do this path to citizenship?
And Brian, wait a minute. Undocumented immigrants, because it just has a criminal tinge.
Well, I try not to take the talking points of either side. So we will say people who are currently here illegally, which I think is a factual description, will you pay the $5,000 per adult and go back to your country of origin to apply for permanent residency? Call us. Nobody's reporting you to the Immigration Service by calling a talk show. Call us and tell us what you think this would mean for your family or for you as an individual. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we've still to get to the guest worker program, the proposed changes to legal immigration, and also border enforcement for the future. So stay with us.
It's also disruptive of families. You know, we're about families and family values and having people coming and going, taking their children out of school, being separated from them. We should try to fashion something that recognizes the reality of life.
So House Speaker Nancy Pelosi with skepticism about the guest worker program proposed in the Senate immigration bill. But here in favor is Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina on Fox News Sunday.
The guest worker program is an important aspect of it. You cannot hire a guest worker until you advertise that no American will take the job, and you have to advertise at a competitive wage. I think we have struck the right balance here. We're securing our borders. We're controlling who gets a job on our term.
Lindsey Graham, preceded by Nancy Pelosi. Pelosi was on ABC This Week, by the way. And our guests for this three-way debate are Washington Post Writers Group syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, who, like most supporters, says the bill is not perfect, but as you've been hearing, he likes it pretty darn well. Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, an advocacy group that wants less immigration. He opposes the bill. And Chunghwa Hong, deputy director of the New York Immigration Coalition, a pro-immigration advocacy group, and she also opposes the bill. Let's pick up right where we left off before the break. Mark Krikorian, Chunghwa Hong was talking about the triggers, which means that this bill, at least on paper, would require the new enforcement mechanisms to cut down on future illegal crossings to be in place first before people can get their visas to, the current people with illegal status can get their papers to be here legally.
No, actually it doesn't. See, that's the thing. It doesn't even do that on paper, because if you read the bill, what it provides for is immediate legal status, immediate amnesty, as Ted Kennedy said last week at the press conference, for people who sign up. You fill out the form, they do the criminal check that a state trooper would do if he pulled you over, and if there's no felony that pops up, you get immediate legal status and a card to let you work and not be deported. The only thing these triggers do, and the triggers themselves are kind of phony because they just have to be attested to by the Homeland Security Secretary, the only thing the triggers do is move the illegal immigrant who's now been amnestied to the next stage of the amnesty by giving him the Z visa, so-called. But he gets a card, legal status, the right to work, as soon as he leaves the office to sign up for the program. So the amnesty is immediate. The enforcement, if it never happens, if the triggers are never, the benchmarks are never reached, that provisional legal status just continues indefinitely.
Ruben,
and there's a lot in our immigration system that's like that.
Ruben, as the supporter of the bill, let me get your take on this, including the general topic of the new enforcement mechanisms. What would really stop another 12 million or however many people it really is from coming in over the next 20 years?
Right, not much, frankly. One of the problems, I think, with folks who support the bill is there's a tendency to oversell it and to sort of say, well, if you pass this bill, it'll end illegal immigration as we know it. That's just not going to happen. You still have an incredible wage disparity between Mexico and the U.S. You have people who will come here for jobs, and guess what? They'll come here for jobs because people in New York City or in Phoenix or in Seattle or wherever hire illegal immigrants. It isn't until, this part of what Mark says is absolutely correct, it isn't until you crack down on employers forcefully, consistently, that you'll be able to get a handle on this problem. Build all the fences you want. People tend to focus on the border. It's not a question of the border. It's what's happening in our homes with our nannies and gardeners and housekeepers 2,000 miles away from the border. Now, in terms of the trigger idea and that provision, Mark's right. I study this stuff, and this one got by me up until about 2 weeks ago. I thought the trigger applied to the legalization plan. It doesn't. It applies only to guest workers. So they sort of worked this out in such a way so that, Mark's right, as soon as the president would sign this bill, there's kind of a temporary legal status that applies.
This new thing called Z visas.
Yeah, that's sort of the thrust of it.
Would apply to everybody who currently is in illegal status here?
Right. I think the way it was marketed up until the last couple of weeks ago was that somehow the entire program would be based on this trigger. That's not true. They parsed it out. They split it up. And suddenly they said, well, let's make the guest worker provision, the 400,000 new guest workers that mm-hmm. were to come in every year. Let's make that contingent on the trigger.
Okay. So that came from an old version of the bill. So without the triggers, Chunghwa Hong, any more favorable toward this?
favorable towards the legalization part.
Correct.
You know, my take on this legalization as part of this comprehensive bill is like, if you agree to, I know you want to talk part by part, but we have to have an overall analysis of what this package means.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's like giving healthcare coverage to those who have no insurance. And then as part of the same package, cutting Medicaid down to, all the benefits. Or getting a wage increase and then eliminating pensions and retirement benefits. This is not, what we have is no longer a comprehensive solution. It's a setup for the same mistake. You know, five or ten years down the road, right, we're going to have the exact same situation because we haven't addressed some of the fundamental pull factors. People come here because they're jobs, and people come here because they want to be reunited with their families. And right now, we're just building a fence, and we're not addressing those factors. And so instead of making our immigration system more responsive to the economic needs for the kind of workers that we want and making it more responsible to family unity needs, we're just setting up a system that forces the same disaster 10 years down the
road. So it sounds like what you're saying is the guest worker program and the end of family unification as a major factor in legal immigration law for the future are so onerous to you that you're willing to give up something that you've lost, that you've long fought for, which is this path to citizenship for people who are currently here illegally.
No, I think we have to do both. We have no choice. I mean, I contend that for people who are saying we can only do one at the price of the other, I really beg to differ. I think with real leadership and a real reform program, commitment to reforms, I think we can legalize people here and take measures to prevent another ballooning of undocumented immigrants in the future.
Let's take a couple of phone calls from people currently undocumented. Vilma in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Vilma.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you here from originally?
I'm from Brazil.
How long have you been here?
More than 7 years.
And what's your status?
Well, illegal, because I never applied, for the legalization.
Mm-hmm. And so under this, would you go through the hoops to become a legal citizen or a legal resident?
Yes, this is our dream, but I haven't seen any proposal from the Congress that is going to help us easily. Each proposal is so hard. Nothing that we're going to have easily, you can stay here, you can continue working. All of them, they are proposing that we have to go back to our country or for 3 years. I'm not willing to spend like $5,000 or $10,000 just for staying here for 3 years and go back to my country. I'm not sure that they are going to allow me to come back. Actually, I don't believe they would allow me to come back.
Why not?
I think this is a kind of tricking. They don't want to deport us, and then they are trying to find some legal way to ask us gently to leave the country.
Okay, so Vilma doesn't believe Chenghua Hang, even what she's being told about what this would require. In your looking at this bill, do you think that it would be hard for people who did go through the touchback mechanism, go back to their country of origin on the path to a green card, would it be hard for those people to get back into the country?
Yeah, I mean, if the government is basically saying, just trust us, that's not going to work because immigration just has been so sloppy and one of the most dysfunctional agencies in the U.S. government.
But what would the barrier be specifically? What would the excuse be? What would the bureaucratic hurdle be that might get people stuck in the touchback?
Right. So they could say, whoops, we lost your application. They do that all the time. They have lost millions and millions of citizenship applications, green card applications.
What else? Anything in the actual rules?
We don't know the details, so that's why there's deep skepticism right now. We don't know exactly, what are the documentation requirements and, all of that. But I don't blame the person who called in for not trusting the government. That's why we need to build in safeguards and make it as simple as possible and most efficient as possible.
All right. Nana in Manhattan, originally from Ghana. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for calling. And you're currently undocumented. Would you go through this mechanism if it becomes law? Would you pay the fine? Would you go back to Ghana for the so-called touchback? Would you do this?
Yes, I will pay the $5,000 fine, and I think it's going to create a lot of monetary expenditure on the family. If you say the head of household have to go home, then you have to pay the $5,000 plus the expenses involved, and also the children that he's going to leave here on the wife. They have to, this man is the person who is earning living for maybe three or four people in their family. How can they survive when this man goes back home? And also, when he goes back home, there are so many bureaucratic in, for example, Ghana, that it will take him or her more than a year or two to get all this kind of process done.
It would take people from Ghana a year or two to get all of this done. Well, Ruben Navarrete, as a supporter, what about that family separation? If it's only the head of household, so-called, who has to go back for the touchback, and yet they have to pay $5,000 per adult. I have a New York Post article here from the weekend about a relatively large family. There are a husband and a wife. There are two children who are in their early 20s, so that's $20,000 in those fines. They say going back home, the head of household would lose $25,000 in income during that time. Plus, the family is separated. There's no guarantee that he's going to get back in. And as Nana from Ghana says, there's the lost income in the interim.
Right. My response to all that is too bad. You're in the country illegally. You're going to become legal on our terms, not your terms. This notion that somehow folks on the far left think that they broke the law to get here. They broke the law again when they started working all these years with fake Social Security numbers. And I'm supposed to throw them a parade and give them a steak dinner. It's just completely unreasonable. You mentioned a family that has people who were in their early 20s and all these various adults, $20,000 in fines. Oh, my goodness. I see it differently. I see that person who's in his early 20s has a job as well. That's why he's out there working. The family's making money through their labor, doing jobs, again, that Americans won't do. Granted, the president's right about that. But if they can generate money to pay cell phone bills and buy iPods and all those other things that young people in their 20s do, even if they're in the country illegally, they can certainly afford to pay this fine for the really important, valuable right to live in this country legally. I listen to the far left and I pull half my hair out. I listen to the far out. It's just nuts that people don't want to negotiate something like this, and they really do think that somehow we owe them something. We owe them, as the earlier caller said, it's too hard. It needs to be easier. Why does it need to be easier? You know, you broke the country. You shouldn't be here in the first place. They've got to be more realistic about politics and the way things work, and it just drives you nuts to listen to this stuff.
We're going to turn the page now and go on to the proposed guest worker program and the implications of that as we continue with our three-way debate on the Senate immigration compromise with Ruben Navarrete, syndicated columnist with the Washington Post Writers Group, Chunghwa Hong, executive director of the New York Immigration Coalition, and Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. And we've taken some calls from people here illegally. We're going to clear the lines, and we're going to ask for a new group of callers, people who own businesses. So if you're a small business owner or if you're even a larger business owner, call us up and talk about what you think the impact will be on your business, and we'll get to your phone calls in a few minutes. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Now, the guest worker program would allow 400,000 people a year to come in for 2 years at a time, three times, separated by a year. So you could work here for 2 years. You have to go back to your country for a year. You could do that again, go back to your country again for a year, come in a third time for 2 years, and then you would have to go back to your country permanently and not have any place ahead of anybody else for getting legal immigrant status. Now, as far as the labor supply, here is Doug Mosbar, president of the California Farm Bureau, which represents farm businesses in that state, speaking on Weekend Edition Saturday on NPR.
Last year, there were several crops that didn't get fully harvested, even some crops that didn't get harvested at all because of a lack of labor supply. farmers can only stand that for so long, and then we have less of that crop available and less farmland besides.
So, Mark Krikorian, we hear from the California Farm Bureau. They're worried about the guest worker program because they think it's not going to give them enough labor.
I've never met a businessman who didn't want more people fighting over his jobs to help him keep the wages low and make his life easier. Now, I'm not saying that, and I'm a Republican. I'm all for business. But the idea that the government should procure staff for private companies is outrageous. The guest worker program is absurd from beginning to end. There are the provisions to make people go back and stay and then come back. That's all a lot of gimmickry, frankly. No guest worker program in world history has ever worked because they all end up leading to large-scale permanent settlement, and they distort the industries that use these workers because it reduces the incentives to modernize those industries and mechanize and what have you. So
why would it lead?
I couldn't agree with that more. I could not agree with the statement more.
Changhua, go ahead.
We're fooling ourselves if we think we can surgically import 400,000 people here to work for 2 years. You know, you come here, work hard, pay your taxes, and get lost. You can't see your family for 2 years. Go back for a year, come back. You know, this disrupts businesses because they don't have a stable workforce that you know, after just when you get done training them and they're leaving. And then for us to have a permanent pool of disposable workers is a guarantee. It's a guarantee a race to the bottom.
Now, this is really interesting because, Mark, you oppose it because you're afraid that these temporary workers will stay here permanently anyway and create a new class of illegals.
Well,
Changhua, you don't like it because you're afraid that they're not given enough rights and enough of a path to staying here permanently.
Yeah, but I agree with that too. That's the thing.
Yeah, I agree with the other point too. It's good. But the big point here for everybody, every American should be concerned about, is this is going to bring down wages and working conditions of everybody. To have like a million temporary disposable workforce with fewer rights, with lower wages, completely at the disposal of employers.
But Changhua, a lot of people concerned about wages say that what you really want, which is much more large-scale legal immigration, would bring down wages even more because that would mean even more immigrant labor.
Yeah, no, we need to adjust the numbers. You know, I don't have the magic number says, the real number is 258,000. You know, we need to calibrate the numbers so that it's responsive to market needs. But that's one thing. But creating a whole another category of second tier workers is just a recipe for disaster. It's going to divide America. It makes structurally, it just sanctions kind of this race to the bottom.
So Ruben Navarrete, hang on one second. Ruben, there's so much here on the table against this from all sides.
Right.
Some people don't like it because it's temporary. Some people don't like it because it's unenforceable. Some people don't like it because they would be second-class citizens. Some people don't like it because the family members would not be able to come even during the temporary work periods.
Yep.
Chuck Schumer, in the clip that we played before, he said that this would create a new class of illegals because these people wouldn't have a path to permanent residency. Can you defend the guest worker program?
Yep, I sure can. I said at the very beginning, my very first comment to you, Brian, this morning was this is a fascinating piece of legislation. If any kind of bill came along like this every day on various issues, I'd be a happy guy covering politics. Precisely because you unite people like the two other guests who typically don't agree on anything, they agree that this bill isn't good. I'll tell you what. Anytime you alienate the extremes, you're on the right track. Anytime the far right and the far left don't like something, you're on the right track. And this is, I think, important. The reason I think that this bill has a chance is precisely because the folks who are at the far extremes don't like it for whatever reason they don't like it. I think the guest worker plan is workable, particularly if it doesn't turn out to be an old a throwback to the old Bracero program, if there are rules and regulations so that these people are treated fairly when they arrive here.
What was the old Bracero?
I don't think a problem.
What was the old Bracero program?
The old Bracero program, as you know, it started in the during World War II. It started in 1946. It lasted until 1964. It was brought down eventually by, among other things, Edward R. Murrow and the documentary Harvest of Shame, where he talked about the various abuses that took place in the Bracero program, mostly in agriculture. And we don't want to return to that, certainly, but I think that if you have a program in place where you bring people in. If they don't want to participate, they don't have to. If they feel, hey, it's not really fair to be away from my
family for 2 years is no guarantee, fine, don't participate. Stay in Mexico if you like. But if you want to participate, these are the rules. We're going to set the conditions. If you want to play, fine. Mark mentioned, for instance...
Yeah, I'm all for putting rules, but let's have some good rules and sensible rules. I think we're fooling ourselves. I think there's two choices for future flow, right? How do we accept the workers that we need in the future? One is a guest worker program where you just use people for their labor, forget that they have family members, forget that they bring down, you know, wages and working conditions, just use them and return them. And then second is, well, since we need these workers, let's have them come here and let's work with them so that they're integrated and they have the same labor rights so that it does not adversely affect other workers. And I think that's a better way to go. There's just no question about it. We got to talk about, I'm not opposed to setting rules, but we got to set rules that are, that prevents the downward pressure and wages and working conditions. We've got to set rules that
Brian,
are realistic.
If I could jump in here, Brian.
Mark Krikorian, go ahead.
This guest worker idea over and over again. The Germans tried it after World War II. We tried it with Mexican workers in what Ruben was talking about, the Bracero program. Every program in history like this fails because workers are not just labor inputs. They're human beings. If you think we need more immigration, you need to import people as immigrants. I think that's a colossal error because the effect on wages and working conditions comes just from having all these extra low-skilled workers. But whatever level we have, as Barbara Jordan said when her Immigration Reform Commission released a report a decade ago, they need to be let in as regular immigrants who are sort of associate members or future members of the American people. I think that number should be low. Other people think it should be high, but guest worker programs should never be instituted, period.
When we continue in a minute, we'll take a call from a business owner, a restaurant owner. We know restaurants, I believe, are believed to be the biggest employers of undocumented or illegal immigrants right now. And so we'll talk to a restaurant owner and take it from there as we continue with our three-way debate on the Senate immigration bill. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
I don't think we have the ability to round up 12 million people and deport them. We don't have the ability to do that. So what are we going to do with the people who are already here? One thing is for sure. If this bill gives them any preferential treatment towards citizenship over people who came into the country in the proper way, that's a non-starter.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on ABC This Week yesterday as we continue with our three-way debate on the Senate immigration bill. By the way, tomorrow we'll have a call-in on the question, what's so bad about amnesty? And we're collecting your comments on our website in advance of that segment. There's all this debate about whether the word amnesty applies, but that assumes amnesty is a dirty word. So we will go one step further and ask, what's so bad about amnesty? If it is a dirty word, why? Is it so bad to grant amnesty to people whose only crime was to sneak into the United States to work, assuming a clean background check and no other criminal background? What's so bad about granting amnesty to illegal immigrants who only snuck in to find work? So as I said, we'll have a call-in on that question tomorrow, but we're collecting your comments on our website beginning right now in advance of that segment. So go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. You'll see the segment page there. Answer the question, what's so bad about amnesty? Say what is or say what isn't so bad about amnesty. Again, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, answer the question there, what's so bad about amnesty? And we'll use some of your answers on tomorrow's show. We continue with our three-way debate with our guests, Chunghwa Hong, Executive Director of the New York Immigration Coalition. She is an immigrant advocate who opposes the Senate immigration bill. Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. He's an immigration restrictionist. He also opposes the Senate immigration bill. And columnist Ruben Navarrete, he is syndicated by the Washington Post Writers Group. He is in favor of it. And let's take a phone call. Vanessa in Redding, Connecticut. You're on WNYC. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You own a restaurant?
Yes, I do. And it's in Westport, Connecticut, which is a very expensive town. And we have a lot of trouble trying to fill our kitchen with workers who are legal. And we're not even talking about minimum wage. We're talking about $10 to $14 an hour. But there aren't enough people in our area who can actually afford to work for that little money.
So do you think this bill would affect your labor shortage one way or the other?
I don't know enough yet about it. I just know that we need to fix the problem to make immigration easier for the unskilled laborers. I think they're only here illegally because they couldn't find another way to get in.
Vanessa, thanks a lot. Here's another restaurant owner, Tom in Manhattan. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I recently had an experience with working with illegals, and I always thought that they would, you know, they have all of the incentive to work hard and so forth. But I don't know for the majority of the population, but we wound up having to fire all of them.
Why?
One by one.
Why?
Simply because they don't see this. I think for them it's just the job is just a means, and then they just collect the money. And then that's it. They don't have any other incentive to do anything else. Show up late, get arrested, doesn't show up at all. Things like that. And I always thought it was like, you know.
So you think your illegal or undocumented workers are more prone to that kind of thing?
I don't know. Just from my experience, it just seems it's the opposite of what everyone is telling me, that they work mm-hmm. hard and they do more. So what happened after I wound up firing all of them is that I wound up hiring legal residents, and we're paying, like, Vanessa, we were paying, you know, $14, $15 an hour. But now we have a full staff that just, you know, are very attentive to work. I mean, simply because they needed a job and they're legal, and I don't have to deal with the fake Social Security card, you know, the fake name, mm-hmm.
right.
thing like that.
And so it's worth it to you to pay more. It's worth it, presumably, to your customers to pay some higher prices.
Yeah, but it's not even about paying the legals more. I mean, the legal resident more. It's just that we pay the same thing, to illegal or legal. Mm-hmm. It just happened that when we first opened, you know, a lot of my partner wound up with a lot of illegals.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to go on to one more business owner here, Gary in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hi, Gary.
How are you?
Okay.
So I have a construction business, and I hire both people, legal and illegal. And for me, I don't really care. It's basically like that gentleman before was talking, you know, for me is what people do, you know. And I think what I think it is a problem with the American system of labor. For my business, it's very difficult to find people to do this, you know, construction.
Why do you think that is? There are plenty of unemployed people in the New York City area.
But I don't know. I think, like, because the money is easier, people don't want to work for a certain wage, you know. If money was tighter, I think people would be more aggressive in looking for work.
So you know? How do you think this bill would affect your business?
I don't think it will affect it. I think the people will still come illegally, you know, over here. I don't think they'll go. I don't think the way the bill is written. I don't think that they'll go along with the rules. It's not feasible for them to do that.
Gary, thank you for your call. Mark Recorian, I read a stat yesterday that says a third. Let's see. Now I'm forgetting the stat. Some huge number. I think it's a third of the jobs to be created in this country in the next decade are likely to be jobs that do not require a high school education. And with the high school education rates that we have in this country right now, about 80%, I believe, we either have to import uneducated workers or there's going to be a labor shortage in things like restaurants and things like construction sites and things like farms. Do you disagree?
No, the economy doesn't work that way. There is no fixed path that the economy will take and we have to accommodate ourselves to it. The economy is a dynamic system. And what a labor shortage just means, it's a market signal saying that the people that you need to pay better wages and better working conditions to attract people and do a better job of developing recruitment networks and what have you to make people interested in that work. What happens with a large, predictable supply of future immigrant workers is that businesses change their plans. They develop a different kind of mindset that avoids making the accommodations necessary to use the labor that's here or use the labor more efficiently through mechanization and what have you. And instead, they come to rely on, they get addicted, in effect, to a future flow of workers, and they can't, and businesses, honestly, in many cases, can't imagine working any other way when, in fact, if the market conditions change, as we've seen in the past, businesses adapt. We have a very adaptable business sector and labor market, and there would be no problem whatsoever in accommodating a lower level of immigration.
Ruben Navarrete, how much do you disagree?
I disagree a lot. I've had this conversation with Mark before, and, you know, here's the problem. Everything I know about farm work, for instance, I learned from growing up in the San Joaquin Valley in Fresno, and I know that those are very tough, dirty jobs. Nobody wants to do those jobs. I don't care what you pay them. You can pay them $25 or $50 an hour. Nobody wants to make a career out of going to pick strawberries or grapes or whatever. Mark talks about machines. He's mentioned that a couple different times. Why don't these farmers just go out and get machines? Well, the problem is when you go out into the fields, you see that in many cases when you're picking this kind of fruit that bruises easily, for instance, strawberries, you can't convince strawberry farmers to go to machines because their livelihood is tied up in this fruit, and they can't just set a machine loose to bruise up their crop that year and bring down their profit margin by 40%. And so back in the real world, I think that these are not desirable jobs. These are not jobs that guidance counselors tell kids, hey, you know what would be really good for you? You ought to go to Kentucky and clean out horse stalls. That's a good job, you know? You ought to go pluck chickens in a chicken plant or go work in a meat slaughterhouse in Nebraska. These are always the bottom of the rung jobs. Immigrants have always done these jobs. They're not any more desirable now than they were back when. It's not a question of wages. I used to believe, as Mark does, that there's a sort of caricature for the employers. But I'm glad the restaurant owners called, because I hear from employers so often who say, Ruben, knock it off. You know, I'm not a cartoon. I'm not a caricature. I really do want to hire the best folks for these jobs, but I can't get American, particularly American kids, okay? We have a work ethic in this country. They can't get American kids to do these jobs. We have no work ethic. Between 15 and 30, these kids are not going to do these jobs.
We just have a few minutes left, and there's one part of the debate that we're going to wind up giving. There are probably a few, but one that I really wanted to get to that we're going to wind up giving short shrift, but I at least want to touch it, and that is the new rules for legal immigrants going forward. And Chenghua Hong, I know this is one of the things that you object to the most, because future immigrants would be given priority based more on what skills they possess than on family unification questions, correct?
Yes, I think the current bill is very, it undermines family unity for millions of citizens and immigrants, and so we can't support anything unless that they make it possible for immigrants to invite their close family members. But again, this is part of the architecture that we have here, where we have a perfectly rational system right now, where it's the future immigration happens by employers sponsoring employees and then immigrants sponsoring their family members. So we need to make that work better. Both businesses and immigrants are opposing this point system because it's just a radical shift in going from the things that we know are important, such as family and employment needs, and going into a point system that it just doesn't make any sense. It's going to open up people from all over the world to apply to this point system. So there's going to be millions of people in the backlogs.
Mark Krikorian, you're also an opponent of the bill, but is this an aspect of it that you like better than Chenghua Hong, because immigration would be based less on just being able to bring in your brothers and sisters and more on what's seen as a national interest?
Well, I mean, the germ of the idea is valuable. In fact, these extended family categories do, in fact, drive endless chain migration, and they need to be abolished. The problem is twofold. One, all they're doing is transferring the numbers to different immigration categories, and the problem is numbers are too high, not just that we're picking people the wrong way. But the other problem is, in this bill particularly, is that everybody who is on the waiting list for these categories gets to come in first. And that's 4 million applications.
That's people who expect the old rules to be in apply for them. They've already applied for
they
residency.
They haven't been approved, but they're in a waiting.
Yes.
It represents actually 8 million people.
Right.
That's a million people a year increase in legal immigration. And then at the end of the second Hillary Clinton administration, supposedly,
8 years
these
from
categories
now.
Will be abolished. I don't believe that for a second.
Now we
and
know,
neither does Ted Kennedy.
Now we know who you're predicting is going to win the presidency. Ruben Navarrete, you're going to get the last word, 15 seconds, I'm sorry to say.
Okay, my position is nuanced, not surprisingly. I don't mind moving away from family reunification as a standard here, but I don't like the idea of going to education and skill set. Getting into the country should not be like getting into Yale or Harvard. You know, people come here sometimes with limited skills, but they have hope and optimism and a strong back and a work ethic. We need those folks. We need to bring more of them in.
Ruben Navarrete, Chung Wah Hong, Mark Krikorian. To be continued, thank you all very, very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we will continue to talk about aspects of the immigration bill all this week.